This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. I have in big letters today on my notes, say episode 34. It's only after I recorded these for the last 2 weeks, I was like, I didn't say what episode number it was. It is episode 34. As amazing as that is, episode 34. I can't believe we're at 34 already. Anyways, in my continuing quest to go 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing, with no grace, did it with grace, now with no grace, I will start day one tomorrow. This whole week, I think I've relaxed a little too much. And it's not been bad. There's just been like one incident here, one incident there, once a day or so. But I just haven't gotten much traction this week. So I'm going to have to like focus in and say, okay, come on, Phil. Come on, Phil. Do the thing. I got tickled because a buddy of mine, I've been relating to him where I've been tripping up. And he said, you know, a lot of your stuff seems to be related to technology. And alas, alack, I'm afraid it's true. I have certain expectations being a technologist. And when those expectations are not met, I have to really guard my tongue. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Hopefully, next week, I will have a better report for you. We have been talking for the last 2 weeks about the big question, if God is a God of love, why is there suffering in the world? And I fully expect that we are going to get this finished up today, because obviously I'm getting right to it. Just some ground rules. We are not talking about stuff that is outside our realm of experience, like what is people's final dispositions after they die, and how could God condemn people to live in hell? How could he if he's a God of love? You know, blah, 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 all that stuff. Because we really don't know what goes on after the moment of death. We have some things that we've been told, but we really don't know how often God comes to people and how often he contends with people. And we really can't see inside people and see the war that's going on inside them and the decisions that they've made all their lives that then contribute to whatever decision that they make at that moment of death. And so I think it's outside our realm of capability to discuss people's final resting places. I just leave that in God's hand and there. And so in the process of discussing this idea of suffering, we've limited it to what we experience here on the planet Earth. And just a quick review, we've really broken it into three discussions. The first discussion was about suffering that is internally initiated. How you can take 10 people who have all had the same experience, for instance, getting divorced, like I have, and you can line them up 5 years later, and you can find 10 completely different levels of suffering in those people. You can go to one side and find no suffering at all, joy, and a person saying, you know, that was a hard thing to go through, but I came through it stronger, and I'm good. All the way over to the other side of the person who's never going to get married again, who thinks, you know, people of the opposite sex are the most terrible things in the world, and blah, 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 blah. So while there is a component there of something that's been instigated outside of them, there's also definitely a component of our suffering that is internally instigated. And so we talked about that for the first week, and we obviously concluded that that becomes a matter of free will, that people choose how they're going to react to the outside events of their lives. Last week, we talked about, well, what about suffering that is instigated by others? Suffering that is caused by others, by the murderer, by the rapist, by the abusive prison guard, by, you know, the abusive parents, all those things. What about that? Why doesn't God just step in and do something about that? Well, in fact, those are caused by free will as well, because it's the free will of that person that is creating those things or making a decision to do those things. And we talked about the fact that God is not going to override that person's free will. And even if we would like God to override that person's free will, where are we going to vote for God to draw the line on this? If I unintentionally hurt someone, is God going to come after me then? And what I concluded is that God is not, and he's going to honor free will because that's what he gave to us. But there's a whole other area that up until this point I've been saying, calling it random events. What about the random events? The hurricanes, the tornadoes, the forest fires, the earthquakes, the genetic anomalies that happen when people are born without limbs or without terrible wasting diseases. What about that random chaotic element? And in fact, in some of the conversations that I've had this week, I've come to understand that when I say random, it really has a larger connotation for some people than I actually mean. Because I mean random from our perspective. It's not that God doesn't know about those things or doesn't understand the cause and effect that's involved in them, but that from our side, it seems completely random, when in fact, perhaps the better word to use is chaotic. Why do we live in a chaotic world? Why don't we live in a world that is perfectly predictable? You know, a world where there aren't any hurricanes, there aren't any tornadoes and earthquakes, where the weather is nice all the time, where we don't have to toil. Why don't we just live in paradise? Well, you know, some would say we had the opportunity to live in paradise, and by our free will, we chose to say, no thank you. We would rather eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And honestly, that is one way that you can resolve specifically the question of suffering in the world and God being a God of love, with suffering being narrowly defined as why do we live in a chaotic world. You can just say, with respect to this one narrow piece of suffering, well, it wasn't that way before the fall. That the world was perfect, that it was good. They had weather like San Diego every day. My wife and I went out to San Diego for one of our vacations several years back. We were out there for a week, and it was like 75 degrees during the day, 65 in the evenings. It was absolutely gorgeous every day. We asked some of the people who were, is it like this all the time? They said, yeah, pretty much. Wow. Why can't the whole world be like San Diego? Well, maybe it was. And we walked away from it. That's a perfectly fine way to resolve it. And if you want to stop there, that's fine. But for me personally, I kind of have a different opinion, and it still gets back around to free will. And that is that I think even during the Garden of Eden, the whole world was not like the Garden of Eden. I think there were chaotic processes that existed. By the way, I'm getting ready to go across that stretch of road that for the last several weeks has been... And you know what? It's done. It's going to be beautiful. There's like not nearly the road noise. It would have been right about here, and it's just beautiful, and there will be no big today because the road's done. Yay! So anyways, moving on. I personally do think that even the world of Adam and Eve had areas in it that were chaotic. And here's why I think that. First of all, I think there is a natural reason for it to be that way. A natural and good design reason for it to be that way. For instance, planet Earth, as you probably know, has a molten iron core. Sorry about that. I'm running over the little stickers that they have put on the road while they're finishing the striping. My wife calls that driving by Braille, which I think she got from a friend. Anyways, the Earth has a molten iron core. That molten iron core is spinning. The great thing about that is it creates magnetic waves. And I think those magnetic waves are called the Van Allen belts. And the Van Allen belts, in fact, make a shield around this planet so that when this radiation is streaming from the sun, in addition to all the light and everything else that we get from it, that radiation is actually guided around the planet as opposed to bombarding us and killing us. So it's really good that we have this spinning molten core. Of course, if you have a spinning molten core, it's really hot. And that hotness creates magma. That magma is going to find its way to the surface through little cracks that are inevitable. And when those surface cracks happen, you get volcanoes. So we could just look at it and put our hands on our hip and say, I don't understand what God has to make volcanoes. Well, volcanoes are sort of a natural result of having a molten iron core, which actually makes life on this planet possible. But you know, volcanoes are more than that. Volcanoes are awesome. One of the things that I want to do in my life before it's all said and done is I want to get over to Hawaii where they have some of those lava flows that go into the sea. And I've seen pictures of there's areas where you can actually walk out on it because it's not, you know, red hot lava. And I don't know how close you can get. I've just seen the pictures, but I would really like to get close enough to see some of that red hot lava stuff because it's awesome. You know, you look at that and just go, wow, that is really cool. It's the same reaction that I have to lightning storms. I do not wish to be struck by lightning. That would be a bad day. But to watch them, wow. That's very cool. I was talking to a friend this week, and we were talking to another friend. We were all talking at the same time, and I said, yeah, I said, when you've been through a hurricane, it is a really amazing experience. And my one friend said, yes, it is. Because he had been through one in Hawaii, and I'd been through several in the Philippines. And the power that's involved in those hurricanes, it's just humbling. Tornadoes, earthquakes, all those things, they just give you a sense of the amazing power of God. And it helps you understand what your place is in the world, you know? We're not very strong individually. But I think what that also does, what the chaotic world does, is it gives us an opportunity. And it is specifically an opportunity with regards to free will. Because even in the Garden of Eden, God put a tree. The Garden of Eden was not a place that God just said, oh yeah, just get up every day, walk around, eat some fruit, enjoy each other, play a little bit, go to sleep. I mean, there were all those things, but then he also put a tree there, and he said, and don't eat that. You know, a little challenge. Don't eat that. Why did he put that there? Because it gives the people in the garden a chance to truly exercise their free will. Because just deciding is not quite free will in my mind. Let me give you a couple of other examples and then we'll get to the point on this. Satan comes to God. God says, hey, Job, you see Job? Good guy. He's making a lot of good decisions down there. And Satan says, well, yeah, he's making some good decisions down there. You've got your hand of protection on him. You give him everything he wants. Of course he's making good decisions. In essence, there's no pushback. Just kind of let things go a little bit. starting to have a little troubles in life? We'll see. We'll see what kind of decisions he makes then. And God said, okay, go. Go ahead, do it. As another example, I've been through a divorce in my life. I gotta tell you that all in all, while it was a painful experience, and while I certainly tried to do everything I could to see that it did not happen, the fact of the matter is I came out of that experience stronger than I was before I went into it. Because there came a point in that experience when I was crying and I was playing the piano and I was worshiping, and suddenly I realized, you know, this Christianity thing really does work. Because I could take the opportunity right now to say, I don't understand, God, why you're doing this to me. You're not fair. This shouldn't happen to me. I've tried to do everything you tell me to do, and now I'm going through this. What's wrong with you? I could go that way. Or I could say, no matter how much pushback I get, I'm still choosing you. I'm still pursuing you. Because at that point, I knew that God knew that I would never forsake him. I knew that God knew that I had made a choice and I was going to stick with it. See, God always knew those things because he sees the end from the beginning. Big bump here. Oh no, they've actually fixed that one too. Anyways, God knew those things. God knew my heart. God knew the decisions that I was going to make because he knows the end from the beginning. But I didn't know that God knew. And what the pushback does for us is it helps us to understand that God understands that we're exercising our free will in a good way. Because if we don't have the pushback, if the things that happened to Job had never happened to Job, there's one sense where we would be right, right, left, 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 right, left, left, left. Jeez! You know, it's just, I'm on my gravel drive. It's just rats in a maze. It's just stimulus and response. It's just automatic processes. Ding! Pavlov's dog. Salivate, salivate, salivate. But the fact that there's some pushback in the world gives us the opportunity to really exercise our free will. Gives us the opportunity that in the face of adversity, we can stand up and we can make a decision for him. And that gets to be very, very valuable because it helps us know certain things about ourselves that we couldn't know any other way. At some point, I'm going to do a podcast on a book called The Drunkard's Walk. And it's about the level of randomness, again, that term that maybe isn't the right term for us, but that level of randomness that is built into the world. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Get my light turned on here in case there are any bugs in there. Oh, no bugs. It's getting cool enough now that we don't have much trouble with bugs. What this chaos in the world does is it establishes a certain level to the game that couldn't be there any other way. And it provides us with a laboratory then that we can really stand up and we can know that we're strong because we are choosing to exercise our free will in the face of adversity. And that's why I think that even in the Garden of Eden, there was, and the rest of the world, places where all those chaotic processes were in place. Because even if Adam and Eve had not fallen, I think God had created a playground for the game where they could find that feeling of satisfaction, where they could find that goal of loving Him and following Him in spite of the fact that momentarily things were going bad. So, a quick review. We've been talking about the fact that if God is a God of love, why is there suffering in the world? And in that question, I think there is an inherent bias. And the inherent bias really is that suffering is caused by God. And the things that we use to create the suffering in our lives were created by God specifically to cause suffering. And therefore, since He did that, He couldn't love us. But in my opinion, at least, a lot of the suffering that we see in the world has nothing to do with God. It has to do with us. We choose to suffer. We choose to take the experience of our life and decide that God's unfair, that we've been hurt beyond measure, that there's just no hope for us, that everything is always going to go wrong. And we create an environment of suffering for ourselves. We choose to look at others and say, why doesn't God do something about that person and take care of that person so that I don't have to suffer? Well, first of all, God has already made every provision that He needs to make so that you don't have to suffer. And second of all, He loves that person. He's not going to violate their free will because that is His great gift to them. And second of all, He loves them. And even though they are far, far away from Him and doing things that make Him sad, He's not going to give up on them. He's going to allow them to continue to have the ability to choose so that someday they may choose Him. And as far as all the other chaotic stuff that's going on around us, God has placed that there not to create an environment just so that we'll experience pain and suffering, but He has put those things there to give us some challenges. Because it is in the meeting of those challenges that we find fulfillment. You know, I've read this quote every single one of these podcasts on suffering, but I think it's a really, really important quote to get down into our spirits and reflect on. Jonathan Lockwood Huey said, "Pain is what the world inflicts on us. Suffering is our emotional reaction when we fail to make the difficult, conscious decision to choose joy." I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And no matter what experience we find ourselves in life, I think there is always the capability for us to choose joy and for us to experience the warmth of His comfort and His generosity and His mercy and grace in our lives. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.